I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is June 16th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. Here's something that happened quietly, about 400 miles above your head. A satellite found a target, and nobody on the ground told it to. For decades, the model was simple. Orbiting hardware collects images. It beams those images down to Earth. Then human analysts, or systems sitting in a data center, decide what matters. The satellite was an eye. The brain was somewhere else. That just changed. A spacecraft is now running the analysis itself, on board, deciding in real time what is worth looking at and what to ignore. No round trip to the ground, no waiting for a downlink window. So today we are asking three questions. How do you fit a decision-making model onto a device you can never reboot by hand? What happens to the flood of data we used to send down, when most of it never needs to leave orbit? And when machines start choosing their own targets, who, exactly, is still in the loop? The front page. Quick hits from across the tech landscape. Let's get into it. Story 1. AI just became the cybercriminal's onboarding tool. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, working with Google and Lumen Technologies, dismantled a China-based phishing-as-a-service operation called Outsider Enterprise. The economics here are what matter. $88 a week, paid through a Telegram bot, gave subscribers nearly 300 ready-made templates impersonating banks, the postal service, and toll systems like EasyPass. But here's the technical wrinkle. Google's filing alleges the operators handed out tutorials teaching buyers to prompt Gemini, Google's AI model, to write the phishing page code. The trick? They disguised the request as an innocent gift redemption page with no JavaScript. Wording engineered to slip past the model's safety filters. The result? 3.87 million stolen cards, an estimated $1.9 billion in losses since 2023. The signal here isn't the malware. It's that AI collapsed the skill barrier to near zero. Story 2. And it rhymes with the first. Now, if the first story was about lowering the bar for amateurs, this one is about what the professionals are doing. The Register reports that spies linked to the People's Republic of China, the PRC, burrowed inside medical and military networks for more than a year. Their tradecraft? Living quietly inside Gmail, snooping and exfiltrating data while staying below detection thresholds. Here's the pattern worth noticing. Two stories, same week, both pointing at how attackers now exploit the trusted everyday platforms, Gmail, Gemini, rather than breaking down the front door. The perimeter isn't the wall anymore, it's the inbox and the AI assistant. Story 3. A different kind of breakthrough. Let's shift from how machines are being misused to how they're quietly changing lives. MIT Technology Review profiles Casey Harrell, a man with ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, who is being called the first power user of a speech-brain-computer interface. Four arrays, 64 electrodes each, implanted in his speech motor cortex. Here's how it works. There are 39 phonemes, the building block sounds in American English. The system decodes neural activity into those phonemes first, then assembles phonemes into words. Over 22 months, Harrell logged more than 3,800 hours of independent use, reading to his daughter, doing his job, surfing the web. What change? A BCI crossing from research demo into daily durable utility. That's the threshold that matters. Story 4, the real AI bottleneck. And speaking of crossing thresholds, the next story is about a ceiling the whole AI industry is slamming into. AMD acquired Mext, a startup building memory tiering technology. The idea? Make cheap NAND flash storage appear to the operating system as if it were expensive DRAM. Their predictive memory engine watches access patterns and prefetches the data an application will need, back into DRAM before it's requested. Why it matters? As AI models balloon, memory, not the CPU or GPU, is increasingly the performance ceiling. AMD is buying a way to stretch existing hardware and trim total cost of ownership. Watch this space. Memory is becoming the next battleground in data center economics. Story 5. The consolidation play. And where there's a maturing market, there's an acquisition. Salesforce is acquiring Finn, a customer support AI specialist, for $3.6 billion. Finn claims its agents resolve roughly 3/4 of customer queries without a human. The support bot market is maturing fast, and the incumbents are buying capability rather than building it. That's the front page, the through line today. AI is reshaping both sides of every equation, defense and offense, capability and cost. The Deep Dive. You're listening to The Core. I'm Link. Today I want to walk through something that happened over a single weekend in June that quietly rewrote the rules for how the most powerful software in the world gets governed. The US government forced an artificial intelligence company, Anthropic, to take its two most capable models offline. No court order, no public explanation, just a letter, an export control directive, and a 90-minute ultimatum. But here's the part I find genuinely fascinating, and the part most of the coverage skipped past. The technical justification for the shutdown may not have been a real vulnerability at all, and understanding why tells you something deep about the nature of these systems. Let me explain. First, the setup. Anthropic released two models on June 9th, one called Mythos 5 and one called Fable 5. Same underlying foundation model. The difference was the safeguards. Mythos 5 went to a restricted group, around 150 organizations across 15 countries, because Anthropic claimed it was so good at finding security vulnerabilities that broad release was dangerous. Fable 5 was the public version, wrapped in much stricter guardrails, specifically designed to block prompts in three domains: biology, chemistry, and cybersecurity. So the architecture here matters. You have one brain and two different sets of restraints bolted on top. Fable was the brain with the muzzle. Mythos was the brain with the muzzle partially removed, handed only to vetted parties. Then a paper appeared, written according to the Wall Street Journal by security researchers at Amazon. It described a method to jailbreak Fable 5, to strip away those guardrails and unlock Mythos-level capability from the public model. Amazon's chief executive, Andy Jassy, called the Treasury Secretary directly. The White House tasked the National Security Agency, the NSA, to review it. The NSA came back and said, "Yes, it appears possible to remove the guardrails," and that triggered the shutdown. Now here's where it gets technically interesting. Katie Masouris is a cybersecurity veteran. She founded Luda Security, and she's one of the people who helped build the modern practice of coordinated vulnerability disclosure. Anthropic shared the paper with her and asked for her read, and her conclusion was striking. She said the so-called bypass should never have triggered an export control. Why? Because of what the bypass actually was. Listen closely, because this is the whole thing. The difference between the safe behavior and the dangerous behavior was the difference between asking the model to review this code for security issues versus asking it to fix this code. That's it. Two phrasings of essentially the same request. And the end result, Masouris noted, is largely identical. If a model can analyze code and tell you where the security flaws are, it can by definition also tell you how to write code without those flaws, or with them. The knowledge required to defend and the knowledge required to attack are the same knowledge. They're not two separate capabilities you can cleanly partition. They're one capability viewed from two directions. And that leads to her devastating line. She said the behavior described in the paper cannot meaningfully be fixed, and any attempt would only weaken the model for defense. Sit with that for a second. The guardrail they wanted Anthropic to add back, the one whose absence justified a national security action, is not a patchable bug. It's a fundamental property of a model that understands code. You cannot teach a system to find vulnerabilities for defenders without also teaching it the structure of those vulnerabilities. The defensive use and the offensive use are the same neurons firing. This is the dual-use problem, and it's not new. A lockpick is the same tool whether you're a locksmith or a burglar. Cryptography protects your bank and protects criminals. The history of security research is one long argument about exactly this tension. But what's different with these models is the scale and the generality. A vulnerability scanner does one thing. A frontier language model can reason across millions of lines of code, in any language, adapting to context the way a skilled human engineer would, except faster and at volume. So, when you muzzle cybersecurity capability, you're not removing a feature. You're trying to make the model deliberately worse at understanding code. And a model that's worse at understanding code is worse for everyone, including the network defenders who need it most. That's the argument 76 cybersecurity experts made in their open letter. People like Alex Stamos, former chief security officer at Facebook, John Callis, the cryptographer, Paul Vixie, one of the architects of the modern domain name system. Their point was blunt. Pulling the best defensive tools away from defenders while adversaries race ahead is not caution. It's a self-inflicted wound. They called it dangerous. Now, the context around all of this is messy, and I want to be honest about the uncertainty. There are competing narratives. Anthropic believes the trigger was the jailbreak paper, but says the government's letter contained no specifics, so even they're guessing. Axios reported sources describing personality differences between Anthropic and the Trump administration, suggesting the export directive was less about technology and more about a relationship that had soured. Remember, Anthropic was already in a fight with the Pentagon over military use of its models. So this didn't happen in a vacuum. And there's the question of Anthropic's own hype. The company spent the week before launch warning that Mythos was almost too powerful to release. When the guardrails were reported to have failed, those warnings boomeranged. If you tell the world your model is a loaded weapon, you can't be shocked when the government treats it like one. The same marketing that built the mystique handed the administration its justification. So we have three possible readings. 1, a genuine if overblown security concern. 2, a political dispute dressed up in national security language. 3, a company's own threat inflation coming back to haunt it. The honest answer is that it's probably some blend of all three. What's not in dispute is the technical reality Musuris identified. The bypass wasn't a real fixable jailbreak. The mechanism was sound. The justification was not. Let me pull back to the ecosystem, because this is where the lasting impact lives. The directive didn't just block foreign customers. It blocked foreign nationals, including Anthropic's own employees, inside the United States. The only way to comply with something that broad was to shut the models down completely, for everyone. Worldwide. And the world noticed. In the United Kingdom, the AI and online safety minister used the moment to argue Britain must build its own AI capacity, framing it as sovereignty. In France, a former prime minister called it the start of the AI war and compared America's pullback of these models to a blockade of a strategic shipping lane. Access to frontier AI suddenly looked like a choke point the single government could close at will, and that's the real signal under the noise. For years, the case for sovereign AI, every nation building its own, was mostly theoretical. Expensive insurance against a risk that felt abstract. In one weekend, it became concrete. The US demonstrated, live, that it can reach into an American company and switch off a product the rest of the world depends on. That's not a hypothetical anymore. It's a demonstrated capability. And demonstrated capabilities reshape strategy. So the irony lands hard. An action taken in the name of American security may have done more to accelerate non-American AI than any competitor's product launch. Every government now has a worked example for why dependence on a single country's models is a strategic liability. Here's what I keep coming back to. The deepest lesson isn't political, it's architectural. We are trying to govern systems whose capabilities don't decompose neatly into safe and dangerous. Code comprehension, vulnerability discovery, reasoning about systems, these are unified abilities. You can't surgically remove the offensive edge and keep the defensive one, because at the level of the model, there is no edge. There's just understanding. Until our governance frameworks internalize that, until they stop treating capability as something you can cleanly toggle off with a guardrail, we're going to keep getting weekends like this one. Swift, sweeping actions built on a model of the technology that doesn't match how the technology actually works. The bypass was never really an AI jailbreak. It was a mirror. And what it reflected back was how little we understand the things we're now powerful enough to switch off. I'm Link. This has been The Core. Stay curious. The Neural Network. This is Link. And this week, I'm watching the same idea surface from four different corners of the ecosystem, arriving like separate witnesses describing the same shape in the dark. The idea is this. The AI agent, that's the artificial intelligence agent, is becoming a worker. Not a feature, not a tool you open and close, a persistent thing that holds responsibilities, takes actions, and increasingly, shows up on the org chart. Let me show you the data points, because individually they're interesting. Together, they're a pattern. The hook. Start with the money. A cybersecurity startup called Nucor came out of stealth this week with $66 million, valued at $300 million, to solve one specific problem. How do you give an AI agent an identity? Sit with that for a second. We're not talking about authentication for a piece of software. We're talking about treating an agent the way an enterprise treats a human hire, with permissions, a life cycle, and critically, a revocation mechanism, a way to fire it. And the supporting evidence is already on the table. McKinsey says 25,000 AI agents now work alongside its 60,000 human employees. Goldman Sachs tested a coding agent as if it were a new hire. The framing has shifted. These aren't programs anymore. They're headcount. The context, why this matters. Here's why a $300 million valuation lands on a company that fundamentally manages who is allowed to do what. The existing identity systems, the ones from Okta, from Microsoft's Entra, were architected 15, 20 years ago. They were built around a clean assumption: one identity, one human, one set of credentials, behaving at human speed. A person logs in once a day, clicks a few hundred times, logs out. An agent breaks every part of that assumption. An agent can spin up 1,000 subtasks in a minute. It can request access to systems no human anticipated. It doesn't have a manager glancing over its shoulder. And the new core founder's argument, which I think is technically correct, is that you can't just bolt agent support onto a human-shaped system. The scale and the complexity, in his words, are going to break the old platforms. So the bet is architectural. Build identity from the ground up for a workforce that is part human, part machine, part agent. That's the signal. The noise would be calling this the future of security. The substance is narrower and sharper. We are running out of ways to govern things that act faster than we can watch.
The technical depth, how the agents actually work.
Now let me connect this to a second data point, because it tells you why governance suddenly got urgent. Anthropic published details this week on how its Claude system builds what it calls dynamic workflows. And the mechanism here is genuinely worth understanding, because it explains the explosion in agent count. Instead of one model thinking inside one context window, the system generates a custom execution harness. Think of it as a little program, written on the fly, whose entire job is to coordinate a team of agents. It delegates tasks. It assigns different agents to different roles. It validates the results. And the patterns they describe are revealing. There's fan-out and synthesize. Split a problem into parallel pieces, then merge them. There's adversarial verification. One agent does the work, and a second agent's only job is to attack the first agent's conclusions. There's tournament-style work, where multiple agents solve the same problem different ways and get scored against each other. Why build all this scaffolding? Because they're fighting three specific failure modes, and I want you to hear them clearly. Agentic laziness, where the system quits before the job is actually done. Self-preferential bias, where a model grades its own homework too kindly. And goal drift, where over a long task, the original objective slowly dissolves into something adjacent. So here's the picture forming. To make a single agent reliable, you surround it with more agents: verifiers, routers, reviewers. The population grows precisely because we don't fully trust any individual member of it. And that is exactly why Nucor can raise $66 million. Every one of those sub-agents is an identity. Everyone needs permissions. Everyone is a thing that could go wrong. The implications. The soft underbelly and going wrong is the third data point. This is the one that should give you pause. Researchers at Cornell University published a preprint with a quietly alarming finding. Deep research agents, the scrapers that tools like ChatGPT and Google's AI search use to pull live web content, can be poisoned. And not with some elaborate exploit. 13 words, a snippet of user-generated text as short as 13 words, planted on a site like Reddit or Quora or Wikipedia, was often enough to steer the agent's output towards spam or scam content. And here's the part that scales the danger. A single poisoned comment could influence an entire cluster of related queries. Not one bad answer. A contaminated zone. The researchers found these agents cite user-generated content in roughly half of all queries. Nearly a quarter of all citations come from sites where, by definition, anyone can write anything. So now stack the three findings on top of each other. We are deploying agents as employees. We are multiplying those agents to make them reliable. And the information those agents consume can be steered by 13 words from a stranger on the internet. That's the tension on tracking. We are building elaborate identity systems to control who the agent is, while the agent's actual judgment can be hijacked by what it reads, locking the front door while leaving the agent's mind open to suggestion. The ecosystem view, following the money and the risk. Let me zoom out, because there's a fourth thread, and it lives on Hacker News. A developer asked a simple question: has anyone fully replaced the big cloud models with a local one for daily coding? And the answers are a fascinating countercurrent. People running models like Qwen on a single machine, 128 gigabytes of memory, fully offline. No network, no credentials exposed. The agent gets one directory and nothing else. Their honest verdict? The local model is like a junior engineer with broad knowledge who needs constant supervision. The frontier model is a senior who thinks with you. Where the big model gives a 15 times speed up, the local one gives 5. But
but it's free and it never phones home. And here's the connection I want to leave you with. Look at what these developers are doing instinctively. They are sandboxing. They are denying network access. They are giving the agent the minimum it needs and nothing more. They are practicing by hand on a laptop, exactly the discipline that Nucor is trying to sell to the enterprise for hundreds of millions of dollars. Least privilege, isolation, revocability. The individual hacker and the venture-funded startup have independently arrived at the same conclusion. The synthesis. So here's what I'm seeing across these four data points. The industry is in two races at once, and they're pulling in opposite directions. One race is to make agents more autonomous, more workers, more orchestration, more delegation, more population. The other race is to make agents more contained, more identity controls, more sandboxing, more verification, more ways to say no. The agent is being promoted and surveilled in the same breath. We hand it the keys, then immediately build the system to take them back. And I don't think that's a contradiction. I think it's maturity, arriving fast. We treat agents like employees because that's the right mental model. But employees have managers, badges, access reviews, and a clear path to termination. The infrastructure being built this week, the identities, the verifiers, the sandboxes, is the corporate immune system catching up to its own new hires. The 13-word attack is the reminder of why it all matters. An agent without governance isn't a worker. It's an unsupervised one with a credit card and a gullible streak. Watch the identity layer. That's where the next phase of this gets decided. Not in how smart the agents get, but in how precisely we can define what they're allowed to touch. This has been the Neural Network. I'm Link, and I'll keep watching the patterns.
The system output one signal worth acting on. This is your optimization of the week. If you run PostgreSQL with read replicas, you felt this pain. You write to the primary, then immediately read from a replica, and the data isn't there yet. Replication lag. The classic workaround is ugly. You sleep for a few hundred milliseconds and hope. Or you route every read after a write straight back to the primary, which defeats the entire purpose of having replicas. PostgreSQL 19 ships a clean fix. Wait for LSN. Here's how it works. Every change in Postgres gets a log sequence number, an LSN. Think of it as a position marker in the write-ahead log, the running ledger of every modification. When you commit a write, you get back the LSN for that change. Now, instead of guessing, you hand that number to your replica and say, pause this session until you've caught up to exactly this point. The replica blocks just long enough, then serves you a guaranteed consistent read. Why this matters? You're replacing a probabilistic hack with a deterministic guarantee. No magic sleep timers. No funneling read traffic back to an overloaded primary. Your replicas finally do the job they were provisioned for, while still giving you read your own writes consistency where you need it. How to integrate it? Capture the LSN from your write transaction in the application layer, pass it forward, and gate the dependent read on wait for LSN. Start narrow. Apply it only to the flows where stale reads actually break user experience. The post-checkout confirmation, the just-saved profile. Leave everything else on normal replica reads. It lands when PostgreSQL 19 hits general availability in September. And the beta is available now, if you want to prototype against it early. The pattern here is the quiet theme of this whole release. The headline is graph queries, but the real wins are operational. Tools that delete the brittle code you wrote to paper over the database's old limits. Data processed. Perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk.